We are at a course that is world renowned, and we are in the second half of the course, and we're on a par three. Big forehands will probably all choose the forehand shot with, I'd say, a fairway driver, and some might throw a distance driver. And if you want to go straight at it, you'd probably throw a mid-range. Some might even throw a putter, and others might throw a slower straight fairway driver. There is a lot of trees on the right. There's one tree that's kind of middle left that's very big, and it's kind of the one tree to miss. The tricky thing about the forehand is low-hanging branches that you kind of have to beat or go underneath. And there is OB on the left and hazard on the right, if I remember correctly. I think it has played many different ways. Another special thing about this hole is that it has a man-made obstacle around the
Hole
basket.
16 at USDGC.
Yes, you got it, Eagle. Eagle is running away with this game.
Said
Eagle's
world
favorite
renowned.
hole.
Oh my gosh.
Is that why you picked it?
No, actually, that just came to mind. It was completely random.
Yeah, one of my favorite holes of all time. That hole
It is
gave
kind of a
me
good
a
hole.
hole in my fifth metacarpal.
Well, you guys are in Kansas City and I am in Massachusetts. How's it going over there?
Yeah, we collected some Chiefs memorabilia, as you can see behind us.
Yes, for those listening, the Airbnb that Joey is at, the basement is filled with sketchings of all the Kansas City Chiefs team members, or at least the relevant ones.
They look kind of scary, to
And
be
they're kind of
honest.
scary, and no offense to the Kansas City Chiefs fans, I mean, they are kind of scary in a lot of regards, but we're in Chiefs country, so we got to put up with it. Welcome to episode
15?
15 or 16.
I think it's 15.
I think it's 15. And like Simon said, there is many miles between Joey and I and him. And it is currently Sunday, the final day of the Kansas City Wide Open. And out of us three, I'm the only one playing currently. And I am on chase card, sitting at minus 12, playing pretty decent thus far. One of the better events of the year. I've had some good little streaks of birdies. And getting the podcast in before the final round. The weather does not look that good right now. There's potential thunderstorms in the afternoon, so the Pro Tour will be monitoring the weather patterns, and fingers crossed that we'll be able to finish today, but it's up in the air, literally and figuratively, currently.
And also, happy Easter, folks. Today's Easter
Yeah,
Sunday.
today's
Oh,
Easter
happy
Sunday.
Easter.
Which I found out about. I found out that it's Easter yesterday.
Nice. Sounds like you were prepared.
Which says a lot about me. But yeah, this is the first real Easter that my son, who's now three, actually kind of knows what's going on. And he was excited to search for some eggs and get some chocolate and some stuffed bunnies.
How difficult of the hunt are you making it when you did you lay out the eggs in the yard or in the house?
Well, we actually went to his grandma's house, which is about 15 minutes from us, and the Easter Bunny set up the eggs in the backyard. They have a little section of woods. It was actually surprisingly creative of like hiding it in like some old tree stumps and hanging off of some branches and under some rocks. So we did a little loop, maybe like a 10-minute little walk around the woods and finding a bunch of colorful eggs, and some of them had some treats in them, and some of them had nothing in them.
Huh.
And it was very fun and cute watching him find the eggs and get excited. That was very cool. And my daughter didn't care at all about the eggs. She just wanted to play in the leaves, which was also very cute and fun.
What's her mobility at right now? Is she a crawler, a walker?
Well, actually, yesterday was one of the first, was another milestone. She unlocked standing.
For those listening, Bradley Williams just walked down the stairs
to do laundry.
He wanted to do laundry, but we're occupying the basement, so he can get lost.
Yeah, he can get lost.
Okay. Well, shout out Bradley. She was a bit late on those kind of milestones when it comes to mobility, but she started crawling about a month or two ago, and now she just stood for the first time for like 5 seconds yesterday. And we all know that walking follows standing pretty rapidly. So I expect her to take her first steps, hopefully in one of the off weeks of the West Coast swing.
What if it's this week coming up?
That would be probably a bit too soon, I think. I'm not sure she's ready, but who knows? Babies, you know, they're all different. They all surprise you every day on what they do or what they don't do. And I missed her first day of crawling, which happened to be the very first day of tour where I went to Florida. The day I left to Florida, she started crawling. It was kind of depressing after being home for 4 months. And I hope I at least witness her first steps. But yeah, next week I'm already flying to San Francisco. What a dream. I'm flying out Monday early. I should arrive in San Francisco by noon. Maybe get a couple holes in the evening once we get to Stockton. We'll see how it feels. I've actually been dealing with a bit of back issues. Joey knows how it feels. I also went to freaking Michigan 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Another one of my classic. I don't think I can really say the official reason publicly yet, but MVP, of course, always working on some fun stuff and exciting stuff, trying to grow disc golf in every way possible. And this is a pretty monumental project they're working on, and I got to be part of it, kind of the presenter or the host of this project. And it was quite the undertaking. And it was probably the most productive 5 hours. I landed in Detroit at like 11 in the morning on Thursday, which meant we got to the warehouse at about 1 or 1:30. And from 1 until about 6 or 7, we were just on the full grind. I think we filmed 7 or 8 videos in that time.
Wow.
And also did a photo shoot or two, and it was fun. I was very happy with my personal performance of saying lines I had to say, because we all know that can easily and quickly become horribly miserable for everyone involved, but I somehow managed. And every time I just nail lines in one take, I am extremely surprised and proud.
It's almost like it's your job or something.
Yeah, I have to say that in the last few years, I feel somewhat of a professional in front of the camera. It's definitely getting easier every time you do it.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%.
But there's still mess-ups all the time. I mean, everyone always messes up. And I'm actually very good at having no script and kind of just saying whatever and blabbering. And the second there is actually a script, that's when it gets more difficult for me, because most things I do are off script or there is just no script. So, yeah, there were scripts involved and I was shocked on how well I did. It was probably the best I've ever done. So that was nice. I had to throw a little trick shot too, though, and that did not go as well as my script reading. It took...
I remember writing scripts for you for Beyond Disc Golf. Those were... Most of those we got actually okay.
I don't know. I
remember the last one. The last one took a while. I remember you chucking a putter off the deck at Pathway of the Gods. and they never found
that
disc again.
If we do more beyond disc golf, I think one of my changes would be that I write the scripts.
Ooh.
Not that you didn't do a great job. You're obviously also very good at that kind of stuff, but I think I would want to say it in my words.
Yeah, I think that's better, because then it would make it less kind of hitchy when we're trying to do the takes, because the way that I write and the way that I talk is not the same English.
Yeah. But no, it was great. Yeah, it was one night only in Michigan. So
one night.
It was a quick turnaround. And I went through the warehouse, of course, as always, looked through some discs, of some boxes, and probably the coolest discs I found, which have been kind of a secret tip of some pro players, are the new run of Neutron Mayhems. I don't know, Eagle, have you tried or seen those?
They're the one that Paul Kranz is throwing, correct?
Yeah. We got to give a shout out to Paul Kranz. Paul Kranz was the first of the team members to get really turned on to these new Domey Mayhems. I mean, shout out MVP. Yeah, they just figured out how to make the perfect dome on this run. It's everybody's chomping at the bit to get some. I think I have 15.
Whoa.
Yeah, so the max white box of those, there were very limited amounts. There were some lighter weights that looked really nice too, but obviously I don't know, for some reason I hate throwing anything below 173. Like, it starts being mental for me. But holy cow, I actually have the box of discs I got behind me. I already sent Eagle, Joey some photos, but I kind of want to show Eagle these discs. They're unbelievable. Those Mayhems fly so good and they feel so nice.
Yep.
Really, really cool. I also found some nice hexes, beautiful swirls, some new fireballs.
That fireball that you found that you sent me the picture of, that red and yellow one, was...
MVP is nailing the swirls lately.
Yes.
Like, if you're talking about the same hexes, I went to DFX for a signing session, and they had some fresh boxes of hexes. Oh my gosh. They are so swirly and absolutely beautiful. Same with... obviously, the Mayhem. I picked out, similar to the Mayhem, there's a new run of Plasma Octane that's unbelievable. I just put it in my bag. It's like similar shape to the Mayhem, and they absolutely bomb. I think I'm probably getting like an extra 15 to 20 feet on my backhand and forehand with these Plasma Octanes. It's tremendous. They feel really, really good. So I think MVP's dialing in the shapes of their higher speed drivers lately, and it's very, very exciting.
And look at this. We talked enough about discs that Simon is now, he's gone and opened his box. Did they ship it back to you, or did you fly with it?
I flew with the box, and I felt like a total weirdo carrying it around the airport on the airplane.
Simon's about to show us this as if it were a video podcast.
Yes. As if it were.
It's not a video podcast, but I'm just going to let Eagle react here live to this beautiful Neutron Mayhem. Let's see. This is but really bad for an audio format here.
They still like it. He's showing.
Just imagine you're looking at a beautiful pink fireball with an orange red swirly rim with some white in the flight plate.
Simon's gonna have to do a new in the bag, because his whole bag is gonna change.
There is something extremely fun about swapping discs in and out of your bag. Like, if you're ever feeling like kind of, what's the right word? Like your game's a bit stale, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Just swap out a disc and then boom, you're fresh.
Or just mm-hmm. like, and if you're really feeling stale, like if you're, there's the stock.
Whoa.
Can we say what it is? Can we say what that is?
That was sneak peek of the
stock balance.
Oh, wow.
Well, this is the special edition balance.
Oh, shoot.
What a beauty.
Yep. All right, let's move on. I feel bad no one can see what I'm actually showing you guys.
Well.
Oh, I also found this sweet run of Pearly Vanishes.
Whoa.
This is Proton plastic.
That's your roller disc, right? Usually?
Yeah. Yeah, I was throwing these Oh, this might be my favorite man right here with the
bull. Oh, room. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I really don't understand the science or the technology. This year when I go to HQ, I'm gonna ask the guys in the plastic department, how do you do... I don't understand.
How you do
know,
that?
How, do you know? After either of you, after all your years playing disc golf and visiting factories, do you know how they make swirls? Like, I don't understand at all how it's done. It's injected into a mold. You can't, like, stir it around and make it look swirly.
From
like,
my
it's
understanding
just all naturally
is that there's, like, a little bit of residue from the previous disc, and you're kind of, like, tactfully swapping colors. So you just got, like, if there's a little bit of green left over from the last disc, then maybe you should like run a white, because then you'll kind of have some more contrast, because it's very easy to mix it up and it start being like a brown barfy color. So
that's the one you sent me. There it is. Look at the red in that yellow flight plate there. That's so impressive. Is that the one that's going to replace the green and red, or are you thinking maybe the pink one?
I don't know. I haven't had any time to think about it yet.
He doesn't have a lot of time, guys.
Let's bring it back over to the Midwest just to talk a little bit about...
Wait. Let's bring it back to Easter.
To Easter.
How many eggs did Emmett find?
Let me guess. About 15-ish?
Let's go. Does he eat them all right away? Can he eat all the chocolate? Is it chocolate that was in there?
Do you put money in there?
We did not put any money yet. I think three-year-olds don't need money.
No.
Not like a little, like, give him like 15 cents and a little egg.
Look, you know, if he can spend a few more years in childhood bliss and not have to understand money, I think that's better for him overall.
My fondest memories of Easter was like getting like a quarter and an egg.
Oh my gosh. And then what?
And then I, like, I don't know. I spent it on something that I wanted.
So you're telling me that in 2005, you could buy things with quarters? It was that long ago?
Yep. Inflation has hit us hard. Simon, I have a question for you. Gibt es Deutschland einen Osterhasen?
Ja, es gibt einen Osterhasen, natürlich. Yes, Eagle asked me if the Easter Bunny exists in Germany. The answer is yes, it absolutely does exist. And while my Easter growing up, we weren't really looking for eggs. We just were looking for like random candies. And all our Easters were indoors. I think, or at least all the ones I remember were indoors. We had like candy, like hidden inside of our VCR player and
young
stuff.
German brain, you thought bunnies laid eggs inside.
Well, we didn't look for eggs. I thought bunnies were hiding candy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it was an egg.
Okay, they came inside and just hid candy.
Hid candy.
The egg part of Easter was more like painting or decorating like eggs, where you would like, I don't know, with like, do they do that here too? What is it, like egg painting? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, egg painting. No, for sure. I grew up as a Serbian Orthodox, which is like sort of a branch of Christianity over in Eastern Europe. That's where my family's from. And so we have a Serbian Orthodox church in St. Paul. And the Orthodox, all the Orthodox religions, they follow the Julian calendar. And so Easter Sunday and Christmas are almost always 2 weeks later than the standard Catholic dates. And so for us, Easter would be in like a week or two. And we did outdoor hunting for eggs with chocolate. And then I was actually an altar boy at my church for probably 15 years. And the Easter Sunday service is the longest service of the year. It's like 3 hours. And it's all in Serbian. And it's, you know, I'm dressed head to toe in a golden robe and holding a big, like a 10-foot tall pole with a golden cross on the top of it and listening for 3 hours in a language that I don't understand. And enjoying the food afterwards. But it was a very interesting, I mean, I would say most of my religious experience as a child was quite an interesting contrast because of the fact that it was all associated with Serbians as well.
It shaped who you are today.
Mm-hmm. It did, but it was a very interesting Easter, for sure.
It was inter-Easter-esting.
Yeah. But okay. This week, here we are in Kansas City. We have a new, well, I guess not new, because they used Bad Rock Creek 2 years ago at the Silver Series that Gannon Burr took down. And
it's been on the lower tier of the Disc Golf Pro Tour for a while. It was a qualifying event, I believe, last year, maybe one or two silver events. And
it's about time that we get back to Kansas City for some big boy disc golf.
Totally. And the TD is Jerry Patterson, who I've known, which is crazy to say, for about 10 years at this point. Jerry's always been the guy who, whenever I come to Kansas City, I stay with him. He's a good friend. It's crazy to think that it's been this long, and he's always been wanting me to come play the Kansas City Wide Open, but I've always told him, it's like, I really can't justify playing a event if it's not an Elite Series. So he told me one of his main goals, there's other reasons, of course, but a part of his goal was to get Kansas City Wide Open back on the Elite Series. So
Eagle would play.
So I would come.
Let's go.
So
wow.
I'm here.
Thanks, Eagle, for bringing us back to Kansas City.
I'm here, Jerry. You did it. Congratulations. And so far, he's done a very good job. My outlook for this event is that he's very relaxed. Like, it kind of looks like he's just out there hanging out, which is what you want from a TD. He has a really great team of people to run the event for him. Kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs. A very great team of people
and
that
like
get
Andy
things
Reed.
Done.
He's just like, yeah, Andy Reid, and
exactly.
He just looks pretty chill.
Uh-huh. Getting things done.
And the course is epic. I mean, the course is...
very solid.
This is, I mean, I would say, so far on tour, it gives Olympus like a serious run for its money as far as like the best course we've played so far this season. I think Olympus as a property is definitely cooler, but this course is... for the land that we have and the area, I think they've absolutely maximized. Like, it could have been a very bad course, given the area that they have. And they made it a really, really, really good course. Like, I am very impressed with the landscaping and very impressed with most of the holes. There's, like, one hole five I would take a couple trees out. But other than that, I think that it's really a fantastic place to play disc golf, and it's got a great mix of Nevin like woods shots and then another good mix of Jonesboro feeling open bombs. So it's a very nice, kind of feels like almost like Pickard XL a little bit.
I've never played Pickard, so I can't comment.
Feels like Pickard XL.
Even Aaron Gossage liked it.
Yes. Well, mm-hmm.
Gossage likes it, it means it's a good course.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, he was going to like it. It's a lot of hyzers.
Ah. So I would have loved it.
Yes. You would have loved it. And this place.
You would have won.
This Airbnb is unbelievable this week. It's got 7 bedrooms. It is. The streak has now been broken of dirt driveways. No more dirt driveways. But it's 8 minutes from the course and it has Google Fiber, which saves me about 12 hours a week of work.
These audio files will be up in no time.
No time. Like 2 seconds up.
Wow.
So, but very impressed. I feel like we're going to be coming back to Kansas City to play disc golf tournaments for a while. Based on the property that I've just seen this week.
The only complaint I have, I would like to be back here later in the year.
Later in the year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother podcast.
On the
though.
Way back from the West Coast, basically?
You know, we could do a lot of brainstorming on like the ideal route of the tour.
Yeah.
But I just feel like we should play
the
this.
The tour should start a month later and last a month longer, in my opinion.
That you took the words right out of my mouth.
Oh, sorry.
And it should start Florida or Texas and then just work over to the West Coast and swing back through the Midwest and then like hit like 5 or 6 events in the Midwest. There's a lot of good golf. You got Preserve, Des Moines, Kansas City, Nashville, Ledgestone,
Idlewild,
D-Glow. Like, and there's not a lot, if you string them together
Eagles
correctly,
Crossing.
There's yeah. not a lot of driving. Save some miles on the car, save some gas money. Everyone's happy.
I still would be a proponent of giving Eagle a free tour card next year if he made the schedule.
Jeff Spring, if you're listening.
Is that the name of
There's
our episode?
Like 80,
Eagle makes the
more
schedule.
That go into it.
I think what I talked to Max Kaza Diggs, one of the ops guys for the DGPT, and I asked him about that exact question, and he said that it is a little bit more than that, obviously, but one of the main things is that a lot of these venues that aren't public have like things that are booked on those venues for tons of weekends of the year, like years in advance. And so you're not like competing with these events like for a wide open. Like they don't have 52 weekends that they could host this event.
Right.
They have like 15 or something
it's
like that.
It's easy to complain when you don't know the full picture.
Uh-huh. Same with the weather delays. It's easy to complain when you don't know the full liability picture. So it's definitely a dream.
It's a dream, but it should be addressed. Like, why mm-hmm. are we going to play USDGC in hurricane season?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the worst time to go to South and North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could honestly probably be there right now, and it'd be better.
Yep. I do think, like, you're going to deal with tornado warnings and severe thunderstorms in the Midwest basically most of the summer. So that's going to be difficult to avoid. I think people say, like, oh, we're in Nashville at the wrong time of the year. And I'm like, what? Like, April through freaking August there's tornadoes potentially in Nashville.
If you live in Nashville, you're
in the wrong time of the year.
You're just in the wrong place. No, just kidding. But yeah, it doesn't really get truly nice until the fall, which that's when we end the season. So I agree with Simon. We could just shift everything a month later, and I think that would be a good start.
But we have two very dominant leaders right now going into the final round. Actually, do you have the scores? I don't know what's going on in FPO right now.
Joey wants me to bring up scores from the 43rd Kansas City Wide Open presented by
Grip Equipment. We have Holland Hanley, who had a 4-stroke lead over Missy and Ella. I don't know.
Wait, they're playing right now, right?
They're playing right now.
Just a few whole scores. How do you not have PDGA Live on your phone?
I have it on my phone. Just
what in the
it's
world?
It's right here.
Seriously.
All right.
Holland Handley's giving me those points.
Oh, they just started.
Cadence Burge with the only birdie on hole number one.
Wow, from 47 feet.
And she is 3 behind Holland Handley.
Shout out Cadence Burge.
Yeah. Ella Hansen is 4 behind, but Holland is in the driver's seat currently.
Holland feels like she's been in the driver's seat all season.
Putting in work.
Yeah.
I remember watching like one video of hers over the off season, and you could just tell by her demeanor, her systematic breakdown of her routine that she means business.
She does. She does mean business.
And then MPO, Gannon Burr is getting frustrated with everyone saying that he can't win anymore, and he has a 6-stroke lead. Or, no, 7-stroke
lead. 7-stroke lead.
And that's going to be a tough deficit to make up, but
we got our two boys, the legends themselves, Macbeth and Wysocki, trying to chase down the young gun.
And, you know, if it's a rain round, you never know. Like, 7 strokes while a big lead with Paul and Ricky chasing you, you never know.
But this would be like...
Not even I would fumble that.
This would be like... yeah, but this is
you
like...
You could fumble that. This Anybody is, in the world would, could fumble that.
This is like Scottie Scheffler coming down the stretch.
Seven is...
A tournament.
Seven might be the cutoff of fumbleable.
Fumbleable?
I don't know. Like, if someone goes eight, it's very easy to shoot like a even on this course.
What's the biggest lead you guys have ever given up and lost?
I think I've given up four. I had a four-stroke lead at the 2018... Or no, 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 no. 2021 MVP Open. Adam Hammes. That's all I'm going to say.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever given up a lead.
Wow, really?
At least, I know, Memorial, Eagle, the year you won Memorial, I think I was leading before the last round and you beat me by two.
We might have been tied.
I think. Or we might have been tied. Hmm.
That's the year you weren't wearing a hat.
That's right. I definitely have given away leads, of course, but I can't remember one right now.
Wait, you had a year where you weren't wearing a hat?
I think I had like three tournaments. Uh-huh. I was protesting Discmania because why was I doing that? I don't remember because they didn't give me enough hats or something.
You didn't like the hats that they gave you.
Oh, I didn't like the hats. And there was like something weird in our contract there was that said like something that we like had to wear a hat.
You had to wear a hat that said Discmania on it. So you just said, I'm not going to wear
Because I was wearing a blank hat. Yeah, I was wearing a blank hat. I was happy with it. But then I was told I'm not allowed to wear a blank hat. So I just decided in protest to wear no hat. Classic. Wow.
That is great. That is great. Well, yeah, we'll see what happens today in the, I guess, and in the FPO, because they just started. But
you'll hear about it on the next podcast.
Yeah, you'll hear about it on the next podcast. But then we have an off week of driving out. We'll be going to, I'll be at Eagle's house for two nights. Maria flies in on Tuesday night to Denver. And then we drive out to Champions Cup.
California.
First major of the season.
West Coast Swing, Cali. What's up?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to get out there. I'm excited to see the West Coast every year. It's fun to go out. And I love the off weeks that we get out there. And I love the nature. And yeah, hopefully the body is feeling better and better as we get closer to trying to make a competitive return to the disc golf scene.
For me, I would say the West Coast Swing is my favorite part of the year. And I like the courses out there, don't get me wrong, but it's everything outside of the courses that make the West Coast Swing really special.
It's like a movie out there.
Right. Like, for example, after Champions Cup, I'm going to go to Mount Shasta, which is unbelievable in and of itself, up to Crater Lake, probably swing through Bend, Oregon. Then you have Cascade Challenge, and then thinking even going up to the Olympic Peninsula, Olympic National Park. I went there 2 years ago. Absolutely breathtaking. Portland in and of itself is a fun city where Milo's at, Milo Estacada area. It's just like so breathtaking, and that's like some of the best weather of the year there as well. And the rivers, one of my favorite things to do is sunbathe and lay by a river, and that is just the primo spot for it. And I absolutely can't wait. And it's kind of wild that it's already time for the West Coast Swing. Like this year is actually starting to move pretty good. And then after the West Coast Swing, it's going to be Europe.
Europe time.
That's wild.
I mean, there's
things are moving.
There's some Europeans who and some players who will not play another U.S. event until after Worlds, starting after Kansas City Wide Open. There's some who, even for after Music City, they're home. I know Kristen and Silva and Niklas, they all return back to Finland, and there's the European Championships this year. This is a big year to be a European, especially a European woman, from what I understand, because the European women play U.S. women's, and then the next Thursday, so U.S. women's finishes on a Sunday, and then the Thursday after that in Wait, where is European Championship? Is that Sula this year? I'm pretty sure it's at. I think it's in Ovidos. So
that sounds right.
I think from if you're like Silva Saarinen, you finish final round Sunday of a major in Wisconsin, and then Monday you have to get to the west coast of Norway to prepare for the European Championships, which start on Thursday. So very wild little travel schedule to get over to the European swing.
Better take some vitamin C.
Yeah.
That's a lot of travel. You don't want to get sick. You got to keep the immune system nice and strong.
Nice and strong. But
Like, speaking of schedule, a little bit bummed. Like I said, West Coast swing is one of my favorite parts of the year. But I'm a little sad because I'm missing probably two of the European events that I would want to play most. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't make sense for me to zigzag across the world to play them or sacrifice the West Coast. And the two events that we're missing, or that I'm missing, is Kona Piste and Ale, both of which are in my top five favorite courses of all time. And it's a bit unfortunate. Wish we could have seen those events a little bit more cohesive with the rest of the European tour. But at the same time, I get the rationale. You're giving Europeans a chance to compete over on their homeland with a little bit more ease. So I get it, but it's just me being the only child I am wanting. I want it all.
I want it all.
I want it all.
Yeah, I'm sad about those two. Ale is the best course in the world for me.
I agree.
And it's getting better and better from what I've understood. I've been talking to Vincent Schaefer, who's one of the owners. You say Scheffler like Scotty?
I think it's Scheffler.
Anyway, Vincent
Schaffler.
Is...
Schaffler. We're both wrong.
Schaffler.
I was more right.
Yeah.
Schaeffler.
And Vincent is one of the owners of OTB Europe and Ale. And I know that they've been building a huge pro shop, warehouse, some sort of a gigantic building.
Megastore distribution unit.
Okay.
That's a good episode name.
Megastore distribution unit.
Megastore distribution unit.
Wow.
Sold.
MDU. So anyway,
that might be the funniest thing I've ever said.
Where did you come up with that?
I don't know. I'm just in that mood right now.
I thought he told it to you, and that's like where you had become so creative.
You know, maybe that's what they'll call it now. Because I know Vincent does listen to the podcast. Or at least he's told me.
He's going to call it an MDU.
The MDU.
The MDU. I do think that it would be nice to see it all cohesive, but you know, we got Europeans and we've got Americans and we've got, you know, schedules are not. I'm not going to sit here and say that it would be the easiest thing in the world to have made those European events schedule smoothly with the rest of it. So, because I don't know the whole situation. But it is definitely unfortunate that those events get a little screwed.
We have a podcast. Our job is to speculate.
Yeah.
And complain. True.
And then the people who did it and have the reasons, then they come and tell us later that we were dumb.
And then it all makes sense.
Yeah. And then
you feel bad for even talking.
Yeah. You shouldn't have run your mouth. You want a wine? Speaking of running your mouth. Simon
Wine! Ooh. I didn't even think about that, but I definitely can. I kind of do a really short one. Simon. How about that?
I feel like that's what you say every episode.
A little sip of wine.
Every episode, you look over at your phone, you go, yeah, I think we have time for a quick one here. A quick wine. Simon wine.
This one's the shortest one in history. It's going to be a world record wine.
Wow.
Tix.
That's a good one.
Oh,
done.
Oh, dude. What is the purpose
of
Tix?
Why in the world do Tix exist? Like, that alone makes me question God's existence.
Wow.
Like, what? I mean, I'm sure they have their great place in the bioverse and the mean the circle of life, but
do they?
Just no.
They're food like, ticks, for something.
Just no.
They're like a mosquito. Like, what does a mosquito benefit?
I actually looked into this.
Oh.
And they actually, I could be, gosh, I'm going to butcher this so bad. I hear in certain places they help purify water.
Mosquitoes?
Yes.
Wow.
Like, they help tend to the certain bacteria in bodies of water.
Okay.
And which helps the overall ecosystem. I heard that somewhere, and it sounded like it made sense.
All right. All right, but ticks, like, man, blood-sucking little leeches.
They're the worst. That's the scariest threat a disc golfer has on the course.
The disc golf barnacle.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that I didn't get a tick, even though I've been disc golfing my entire life, I didn't get a tick until I was, like, 16 years old. And I thought I was, like, immune to ticks. And then guess where I got my very first tick. And it took me way too long to realize, even though I noticed that I had something there, but I'd never even thought about that it was a tick because I thought I couldn't get ticks.
Are you saying like where, like location in the world or location on the body?
Location on the body without going like...
I mean, it seems like because you asked... On air, I can't imagine that it's...
No, it's not. It's not.
It's not there.
It's not there.
In your belly button.
But it's yes. In
yes.
Side.
What?
My belly button.
Nice. Oh my god. That was good. I was not gonna
like
guess
that's
that.
Like the most PG part of the netherworld that you can talk about.
Yes.
Yes. Exactly. So it was like I do not have an outie, as people would call it. So I have a very inny belly button. So it was like...
Were you just in, like looking like for lint and that's how you found it?
No, it was like itchy.
Oh.
So I was just like scratching it. And then I noticed there was like a little black dot. And I just thought I had like a scab or something random. I didn't really know what to think of it. So I like left it there for hours just thinking I had like something. And then... At closer inspection, I at some point realized that little dot has legs. And it freaked me out.
So what's your method? What was your removal method? Did you get some tweezers?
Yeah, I think I was at a disc golf tournament in France, actually. And disc golfers are prepared for ticks. So
did you play against Sylvain Gouche?
Yes, Sylvain
was there. Did he beat you?
Well, no, Sylvain actually... Wait, was he there? This might have been pre-Sylvain Gouche, that tournament.
Who is this?
Yeah, he must have been there. No, he was probably
France.
There.
The best player from France.
It was a battle. I actually got... This was European Championships, and I think I got second. KJ Naibo was winning and kind of, I think, fumbled it a bit in the final round and ended up coming in third. And Jesper Lundmark, want to say, took the win.
What do you think Jesper Lundmark is doing these days?
He's probably listening to our podcast.
No way. No shot.
I honestly have no idea what Jesper is doing. I have talked to him very limited amounts of times in my life. He's a very private person. So I bet he still throws every now and then if he gets chances. I don't know if he's involved in any other sense than just playing casually in the sport.
For people who haven't heard of him.
I wouldn't see why not.
You should go Google Jesper Lundmark. And he has some of the most mesmerizing form I've ever seen. It's so unique. I don't even know how to describe it. There's so many different hinges and movements that don't make sense to me, but it looks really clean when he does it.
Yeah, it's like how I'm trying to describe it and I can't find the right words. It's almost like if a cartoon character tried to throw the smoothest throw of all time, that's what it would look like.
That's a pretty good description. That's a very good description.
It's like ballerina, but in like a cool way.
Right, exactly. Could he throw far?
Yeah, I mean, nothing crazy. He definitely didn't have crazy arm speed, but he had good timing, good technique, so he'd put a move on it, but...
And he was, like, one of the best European finishes at Worlds, right? Didn't he get second at Worlds or something like that?
No, that was Marcus Schellström.
Oh, another legendary Swede.
Jesper might have also gotten second once. I know Marcus got second twice at Worlds.
Jesper won a major before.
Jesper's won more than one major, I believe.
Really?
He definitely won European Open, the year where I got fifth, kind of my breakthrough tournament. When I was 15 or 16? 15? 16? And he also won at least one tournament, a major in Stockholm.
Okay.
Wow.
They used to have the Stockholm Open, which I think was a major. Scandinavian Open was a thing.
That's Skellefteå. Yeah. Uh-huh. At Disc Golf Terminalen, all the way up north of the 64th latitude, which is the furthest north that I have ever been in the world.
And the course starts with a par 6.
Not anymore, but it used to.
Yeah, not anymore. That, when I played
that
it,
that course is...
Hole 1 was a par 6.
That hole is ridiculously cool, too.
It is, yeah. That hole takes like 30 minutes to finish in the foursome.
Well, and it's not the same pin anymore because...
And I witnessed a three.
You witnessed a three?
Yes. I wish I remembered his name.
What hole's tougher, that hole 1 or 12 at Northwood Black?
12 in Northwood Black.
That's tough. It's a tougher hole.
Yeah.
Okay. I've never seen.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So no, Skellefteå is it's really flat. That's the biggest difference. It's really flat, and then the gap is large. I mean, it takes big shots, but it's not like a tiny little window that you have to hit. But now the basket is like probably like 100 feet at least shorter than it was because they put a road in out the back on that course. Like there's like a. Yeah, there's a roundabout out there past that green now, so they moved the basket a bit shorter. But I was there when Paul McBeth and Lauri Lehtinen battled it out for the Skellefteå Open title on Paul's birthday. He won on his birthday.
What more could you ever ask for?
They sang him happy birthday on the final green, right, as he dropped in his final putt for the win. Everybody, like, somehow, Calixto, who is the... PDGA Europe media guy from Spain. He told everyone in the crowd that it was Paul's birthday without Paul like hearing, basically. And then they surprised him on the last hole.
You were filming, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I was filming. Yep, that was like the special Maria week that we really like. That was where the spark turned into a flame.
That's beautiful.
Thanks. Simon, thanks for your whine about ticks that turned us into talking about some great Swedish disc golfers. But I just came across in my feed yesterday was a video about ticks in Alaska, in like the guys who do like the hunting up in the northern in the tundra. And I'm gonna send it to you. If you don't like ticks, this will make your skin crawl, how many ticks these dudes were dealing with. They put, like, reverse duct tape, like little duct tape patches all over their body, and, like, each duct tape strip there was no open space on the strip of duct tape, just all ticks. Just, like, each human had at least 100 ticks on them at once.
That's my nightmare.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Do you guys have a segment ready or what?
We could go in two different directions.
I have a couple that I could do.
Did you finish the seven pillars of a traveling disc golfer?
We did make that list, didn't we?
You shared it with me.
Uh-huh.
That, or we can read some emails. That could be fun and interactive.
Either way.
Do you want to spearhead this, Joey?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. All right, well, Eagle and I came up with this list of the seven fundamental pillars of a touring pro. And it's essentially, like, outside of being good at disc golf, it is the seven things that...
make you good at being a disc golfer.
We think make a good touring disc golfer. So it's not just about being able to like show up to your local A tiers. It's about what does it take to do well out on the road traveling.
Right. And I'd say this takes effect. Probably you could, it's right when you get on tour, but a lot of the time you have a little bit of a grace period when you start traveling because everything is so exciting. The fact that you've never been to all these places is really cool. And you almost, that's your fuel in a lot of ways, like your new experiences. But for example, once you've been to Emporia, Kansas for the eighth time, you need to rely on some of these fundamental pillars to get you through the weeks to have structure in order to find success.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, everything's exciting at the beginning, but to make a sustainable, successful touring pro, I think that it's a lot more than just being good at throwing a frisbee on any given moment. And it takes a lot to get your mind and your body ready for a tournament on Friday or Thursday. And also, especially when you're starting out and you don't have the money exactly to hire out a bunch of people to do these services for you, you know, you're running your own small business, essentially. Whether or not you actually have an LLC established, you are running like your own small business. You have to handle all your income and you have to make sure that you're reporting it the right way. And there's just a lot of logistics that you have to manage, aside from just like showing up and competing in your sport.
All right.
Should we do it one at a time?
One at a time.
All right, you can start.
And you can comment on these too, Simon, if you feel the need. Number one is sleep routine / setup. This is very important, especially if you are staying with a boatload of people. It's very easy for this to go by the wayside. A lot of the times you have late nights out on tour, and those are some of the most memorable nights. So you want to still have those, but know why you are out on tour. You're there to compete. You are there to play tournaments. So not getting adequate rest, a lack of sleep is a lack of performance, in my opinion. So I would say if you're trying to balance a good time with good performance, you want to be getting to bed by no later than 11 or 11:30, one night or two every once in a while where you have some more fun. That's not the end of the world, but being diligent about getting to bed somewhat early and getting at least 7 or 8 hours of sleep is essential for performance and longevity.
Look at that face. Look at that face.
I definitely don't check that box.
I also think that the
so far I don't qualify.
The setup side of it's really important because everybody has a different setup. So some people sleep in vans, some people sleep in cars, some people sleep on air mattresses, some people sleep on beds, on couches. So you kind of have
laundry rooms.
Yeah, you have to figure out based on your budget and your setup and the way that you sleep, you know, how much are you going to choose to spend on sleeping and sleep quality? How much of that is important enough to you to spend more money than you would to make sure that you have a bed to sleep in consistently? Or is that just like financially not in the cards and you have to, you know, look around for little corners to put your air mattress on, or you have to look for rest stops? And, you know, once you get the van, then you have the whole deciding around, like, do you use it a lot? Where do you park it? Do you plug it in? Do you have the air conditioning running? There's all sorts of factors that go into your sleep setup.
So someone just came down the stairs, and this person is Eli Swanson.
Eli Swanson.
And he has a minivan.
Mm-hmm.
Does he just sleep in the van in a lot of instances?
Well, this week he has a bed here. Everybody this week is sleeping in a room with a bed, which is really rare. Eli is also taking one of those rooms, but he does have a full like built out setup in his van, so that during the off weeks, he doesn't have to get a hotel every night and he can just pull onto a rest stop, which is super convenient. I mean, you have that same option.
Yeah.
I love the way my setup works because I have a car, which is a lot smaller, better gas mileage. It's more maneuverable. But I don't have an ability to just like pull off the side of the road and go to sleep right away. That's the one thing I can't do. So on the off weeks, it's definitely more logistically challenging for me to make sure I have, you know, beds to sleep in consistently, rather than having a van like you. Well, like, you still might take the occasional Airbnb from time to time, like especially Calvin Heimberg, you know, he's in Airbnbs most tournament weeks in a room. Mm-hmm. You have that, always have that option of having the bed. And I feel like you use your van more than even, because you have it nice and clean and you and Ratana take really good care of it and you have a really good setup to live out of it. I feel like you lean on it a little more than some people even.
I'm starting to realize that I prefer being in the van. The only instance where I really don't like it is when it is over 65 degrees at night. Mm-hmm. And because the van generally feels around probably 5 to 8 degrees warmer than it actually is, because we have Ratana and myself in there and we're just
space heaters.
It gets hot and airflow can be a little bit difficult. So
do you have a fan?
We have a fan. We have an air conditioner, but it just, even when we run those, it sometimes doesn't work. It still is hot and can get quite uncomfortable. It uses up a lot of our battery. So when the summer months are upon us, I feel we'll probably migrate indoors a little bit more often. But right now in the spring, it's been nice and cozy in the van. And it's just nice to be surrounded by your own filth and not other people's filth.
Sure.
It's more homey.
Yeah. I will say too, like, you know, it all depends on your place in the disc golf world, as a player. I mean, those big fancy van setups, if you want to do it all yourself and you want to buy the van new and you want to have the build out, you know, you're looking at six figures pretty fast, in my opinion, for new versions of all that. If you want to, you know, buy something that has 100,000 miles on it and has the build out already done, and you maybe buy it from another disc golfer, there's a world where you can get a setup like that for $25,000 or $30,000. But it's a big lift for a touring disc golfer.
And probably the vehicle that you're getting with that has high mileage and
yeah,
how long is that going
to
last?
You're going to rip it around the country, mm-hmm, and put even more miles on it. So there's always things to think about. Next bullet point on the list is eating routine. Very important. I think that it's essentially fundamental for the energy that you use all day long. I think it's a lot easier to eat healthy when you aren't traveling full time. And so part of the eating routine is also knowing the places to go in the cities that we visit frequently and kind of having like a little Rolodex of places that you like to go to eat out, grocery stores that you like to go to shop for food, and then having like, you know, 3 or 4 meals that you can shop for easily and you can cook easily and that are like healthy for you. That's, I think, really important before the start of the season, if you have like some stuff that you know you're going to consistently make.
Yeah, know your diet, know what makes you feel good, and always be making the best decision possible. Even when you're going to fast food restaurants, my thing when I go out to eat, you can clearly tell what the healthiest thing on the menu is, so you always be making the best choice possible for the situation you're given.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Simon, I say that it's interesting for you.
I don't check that box either.
No, you do this year. This year, you've changed your eating habits so much. Like, I mean, I think you guys...
He's went from a large to a medium.
Yeah, and you're cooking a lot more. Like, you guys are actually, like, grocery shopping. Not that you don't still go out to eat some food sometimes, but, like...
This is also my 12th year on tour. I'm just saying, for 11 years I didn't check that box.
Sure, sure. But I just think it's important to note that you have really made an effort, and I've noticed that effort change, especially with your eating and your drinking. I feel like I haven't seen, not that I'm like used to seeing a lot of beer in the fridge, but there's like no beer ever any week on tour this year.
Hop water.
So that's also
impressive.
I haven't
had a single beer this entire season during tournament week.
Wow. I'm very impressed.
Not one.
All right, next bullet point is the one that you are really good at here, Simon. Number three is social core. The road can get lonely. The tour life can be a grind. Competing at the highest level of any sport is difficult and strenuous and confusing, and it is not going to be all success. And having a good group of friends that are also doing this, and having a good group of people that you stay with every week and that you hang out with, I mean, I think it makes or breaks whether or not players want to keep doing this tour year in and year out. Like, I think it literally is the difference between whether or not people want to go out the next year for another 10 months of travel or not. And I think our little group that we have built this year at these Airbnbs is like a huge reason why I have been able to really enjoy the road this year, despite not being able to play disc golf, is because of our social core.
We just need to play better.
Mm.
Our group has not performed outstandingly well, but I mean, it's good to leave room for improvement.
Well, you have the lone podium of the group. So
that, yeah. And of all places, it was freaking Waco. You'd have never guessed.
Never guessed. Any comments on
that? That was a 40-footer away from winning Waco.
That's very true. Like, if you look at studies of one of the number one predictors of longevity is who you associate with and your friends group. Like, mm-hmm. that's crucial. And I think one of the easiest groups of people on tour to look at is the Gannon, Gavin, Isaac, Ezra, Alden crew. It's like, you can tell that they're all friends messing around. You can tell that they're having a great time. So,
but they're also all pushing themselves.
Exactly.
Like, they're not too fun oriented. They are like also really pushing each other to kind of one outdo the next guy. They're all super competitive.
Totally.
And now three of them have Elite Series wins, and two of them have major wins, and three of those guys, I think, well, let's see, including Gavin, I would say there's four of them who are in the top 20 in the world. And,
yeah.
I mean, and Alden's gotten top 20 in tour points in previous years as well. So, I mean, those guys have, like, elevated.
They're all gamers.
Yep, all elevated
each
other. All right, next one down the list, number four, physical routine. Whether it is the gym, whether it is daily stretching, mobility, strengthening,
whether it's warming up,
whether it's rehab, how much you throw. Everybody needs to have a good understanding of their body and how much load it can take and what it needs in order to be ready to go for throwing hundreds of shots a week, and that's a lot on the body. I actually just got my MRI results back, and I have a what was it?
Stress fracture.
Yeah, but it was like a light something. It's a light stress fracture in the pars interarticularis, which is like a bone at the bottom of my spine. And there's like a stress fracture there from just like overuse basically on that area. And so it's like very important to be, you know, really on top of like how much stress and strain you're putting on your body. And, you know, once something gets hurt like that, it can be tricky for it to get better quickly. So having a good physical routine that maintains your body in good shape, but as well as like understanding when you need to rest, I think is also really important.
Yes. It's for people who don't have it, I used to wear one, was a Whoop band, and it measured your heart rate variability, which is a very good indicator whether your body is overstressed. It give you a recovery score each day when you wake up, and it was a great framework to operate on, because you knew if you ate healthy, if you had a good night's sleep, you'd see it reflect in your score. And it kind of was a really good teacher in order to help me get on better habits. And I would recommend that to a lot of people starting off. I don't wear one anymore because it actually became a double-edged sword, because I would not have the best recovery score on the day of a tournament, and it kind of got in my head. So I didn't want to have that baggage, but just knowing how your body operates, that's the biggest challenge, and knowing what your body needs. This ties into food, this ties into all the things we just talked about. They all have an effect on the broader scale. So if you become in tune with your body and listen to it and give it what it needs, that's a large portion of building the foundation for success.
Yep. All right, number five, fast and quality decision making. The tour can be like a section on a river of whitewater rapids, and you have to be the captain in the inflatable canoe to navigate those bumps without capsizing your boat. Not everything is going to go according to plan. Things are going to pop up. Problems are going to arise that you need to handle on the fly. And you need to be able to assess a situation quickly, cut out your emotional attachment to whatever the results of that situation might be. I'm really not even talking about tournament stuff right now. Mostly just like things that go wrong, like your car breaks or you having like an issue with two of the people at your Airbnb, or you're injured. You have to figure out how to handle the hurdles and make quick decisions because you don't have a lot of time. Things happen quickly out here. You're in 1 week, and then the next week you're somewhere else. And so understanding that you have to make quick and quality decisions when things arise on the road is super important, in my opinion, too.
Yeah, exactly. For people who are getting into touring, if you are a planner, that's a good thing, but you need to learn how to go with the flow, because your plans are going to get derailed. If you get stressed out by things not going your way, then you might want to reconsider touring and disc golf at large, because while it's good to have an idea on what you want to do, the way you get from point A to point B, you have to be adaptable.
And that's point number six. And they kind of go hand in hand. So point number six is adaptability. Point number five is quality and fast decision making. So just being able to either conform to other people's plans or conform to the new reality of whatever presented itself to you is really important to being adaptable. And then in those moments where you do have to make decisions, it's important to really just prioritize getting that decision made in the right way and making sure that you put the right process towards it. There's just a lot of things that you gotta be ready to kind of pivot on. And then the last one, which is really important to me, I think, is non-disc golf hobbies. I think it's really important on the road to not have every single element of your day-to-day life revolving around disc golf. I think the burnout is one of the things that new and old pros struggle with every season, is how do you not get burned out halfway through July? And I think part of that is having a whole host of non-disc golf hobbies that you enjoy doing. And I think our group does a really good job of that. We've got, obviously, darts. We've got the guitar and the cello. We've got whatever we end up trying to mess around and do as a group, playing games. Everybody's got things that they like to do off the road. And if you look at any really successful touring pro, they all have one or two really big non-disc golf hobbies that take up a lot of the time that they have when they have kind of finished their physical and eating routines. And when you got free time to kill, you need to have something else to do. And I think if you can attempt to execute on those seven fundamental pillars, tour will be a lot easier for you.
Absolutely.
What did you think, Simon? What did you think of our list of seven?
I don't apply to most of them, I feel like. But so I don't know.
Simon's an anomaly among anomalies. So take whatever he says with a grain of salt.
Or you
but
can
we're
just
all
be
anomalies among.
That's true, but you're the Wunderkind.
If you just have unbelievable amounts of genetic ability as well as super, super early reps before the age of 7 years old, and you're just this naturally gifted phenom, then potentially a lot of these pillars are less essential to success on the course. But I think for a lot of people out there listening who are thinking about touring, these seven things would be really important things to look at as you're trying to decide if you want to make the jump onto the road.
But I would disagree because I think they all apply to you.
Oh.
Like looking over them, the only one that is doesn't really apply to you is the sleep routine. But you try. Mm-hmm. I mean, eating routine, you know that's important. Social core. You always have had a good social core.
Well, you're like the reason Eagle and I have a good social core.
Physical routine, you're taking that more seriously now. Mm-hmm. Fast and quality decision making. Well, you're always
you make great decisions
you're
on the fly.
Decision. You're always making decisions to fly.
Yeah, or not
yeah,
to
let
fly.
Me, you're, let me add. Let me add to your list because I think you're missing one or two pillars.
Okay.
You have to love to travel and not be home. Like if you like that's been my personal biggest struggle that I mean I've been able to do it and manage it, but all I really ever want is be home and I need a home base. And I think the less you need a home base and the more you love being on the road, the easier you'll have it out there.
Yes.
Avery Jenkins is a perfect example of that.
And then one more I'll add is don't do it to make money. Like I think that is the wrong mindset. Like if you're starting to be a pro disc golfer to make money, that's not really gonna work.
I would hope that people listening to this,
because you love it.
You could say that about literally everything.
I would hope that most people listening to this aren't trying to become a pro disc golfer for the money. If you're trying to just make a bunch of money, there's a lot of easier ways to make a bunch of money than to play pro disc golf.
And I could, it's not just money. Don't do it to be famous either.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you listen, don't do it for all of the reasons that you want out of success. Like, don't do it. Like, why are you touring? Oh, because I want to win a world championship and because I want to, don't do it for this, like, list of, like, Hall of Fame induction level achievements that you think you would achieve because of this tour. Like, you have to fall in love with the process of traveling the country and at the same time improving your own game. Like you have to fall in love with the journey of becoming a good disc golfer. And I think that for a lot of non-Simon and Eagle people, that road to success is something that a lot of people like, and myself included. I mean, I'm like somewhere along that road to being a successful disc golfer, and I love the journey of trying to get better. Like that is like, it's not like the goals that I'm going for. I love the process of trying to better myself. And I think that that's what you have to get addicted to, not the end results.
I would agree, but I also think it's okay to have the goals of the end result. Like, I think
they just can't dominate your every thinking.
You need to have a good balance. Like, 80 to 90% of your drive is coming from the process, but you got to have that carrot.
Well, you have to have a goal to dedicate the process to.
Otherwise, if you don't know your why, then why are you doing
it? But if you go on tour to win the world championships, and that's the only reason that you chose to go on tour.
If you have a set finite goal.
And if you don't win the world championships, the whole thing, all the rest of it was like pointless. That's not the right reasons.
You don't want to base your happiness on fleeting desires.
Yep. Well, I actually agree, Simon. Thanks for the two points. So we've got nine
pillars.
One more thing. Ten?
One more thing. Let's make it a clean 10. One thing I don't know if I've ever said this on the podcast before, probably, but you need your game to be where you're happy with your average. Your average game is the game that matters. No one cares what you are when you're at your best, because we are at our best basically never. So it doesn't matter what you're capable of when everything comes together and you're playing your best. That literally doesn't matter. What matters is, what's your game like when you're playing average? Because that's 90% of your rounds.
That's your baseline.
Are going to be average. And I feel like a lot of players who are kind of stuck between this, like always like all around the cut line, like we all know how good they are and how good they could be if they put it all together. Like everyone out there on the pro tour can put it together and play amazing disc golf. But that doesn't matter. What matters is, where's your average at? And that's what you have to be comfortable with. And you just have to be prepared to, I mean, your average is what's going to show most. And that's what has to be good. Your best almost really doesn't matter.
That's what Tiger Woods said. On tour, it's not about how good is your good. It's about how good is your bad.
Yes. Also that.
That's why Gannon's the best.
Yeah. Because his bad
Gannon's
is good.
Bad is unbelievably good.
Gannon's bad is like 10:30. That's his bad. His bad is 10:30.
It might be better than 10:30 too.
It's crazy. Well, you Scoville units, I want to say big appreciation to some of you out there for buying some Pepper discs. I have shipped out over 50 discs in the last 2 days from my most recent restock. So huge thank you to all the fans for the support on the Pepper discs, as well as all the awesome emails that I have received. I've been reading through most of them, and definitely in one of these upcoming segments, we're going to go through and read off some of the best ones that we've gotten so far. But thanks everyone for listening. Simon, send off, man. Send us off.
Guys, I hope the final round today finishes. And Eagle, get that podium, because it's only 3 strokes away, I think.
Only 3.
And yeah, good luck for the travels to the West Coast. I'll see you guys next week in beautiful California. And until then, I'm going to relax.
Have fun with your Easter eggs.
I'm going to have fun with my Easter eggs.
And the episode name is, what did I say? Megastore Distribution Unit?
That's it.
Megastore Distribution Unit. All right.
All right. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Sleep well.
There goes Simon.
Simon went bye-bye. We lost connection.
Did his phone die?
Is it our fault?
It can't be our fault. He's back.
And we're back.
What happened?
I don't know what happened.
Can you hear him?
I can hear him.
Okay, cool.
Wow. Joey, can you...
I think it has to do with the
what's going on here, folks.
Yeah, when you take it out.
When you take it out. Oh, Will is gonna love this section.
Because that's what my AirPods do sometimes.
We're just all talking over each other because we can't. Nice.
So right around.
This phone doesn't work. Joey.
We'll make a note.
I don't know what's going on. We got to wrap it up quick.
Yeah.